was Janice Ian stumbling and cackling her way through a song called And I Did Ma from the album For All the Seasons of Your Mind. Before that, Dori Previn, Mothers and Daughters, from the Mythical Kings and Iguanas album. And yes, I do use all vinyl all the time here at WBAI. High tech be damned, full speed ahead with the crack snaps and pops. I don't care. I love them. I haunt thrift shops. Albums, vinyl is my passion. I am a vinyl junkie. Get on my hands and knees and root around in the dirt. Get it up my nose and sneeze. I just love albums. The name of the show is Heresy, where radio speaks with a woman's voice. My name is Sharon Griffiths. You're listening to WBAI in New York. This next piece that I'm going to read very fast is a chapter from a book called The Young Woman's Guide to Liberation by Karen DeCrow. Again, another oldie but goodie from 1970. This is chapter 6, and it is called Mother. One of the most dangerous myths around is that every red-blooded American girl is supposed to hate her mother. It's dangerous because it further separates woman from woman. Female solidarity and self-interest should override even the generation gap. It is a myth because it is not true. Most of the mother-daughter hatred, which does exist, is not that they are competing for the love of the father. It is not the generation gap. It is that the mother is the tool by which society socializes the daughter into the role of woman. In other words, it is your mother who must give you the message loud and clear. You are here to please men. You must please men to survive. You must sublimate your own aspirations and desires to accomplish this, as she did. And she didn't enjoy doing it. Even in the most domestic and ladies' home journal model wife and mother, there lurks a rage. She doesn't like being everyone's servant, and she certainly doesn't like the job of training her beloved daughter for the same fate. She has little alternative than to do this. No mother wants to raise a misfit, and any mother who doesn't indoctrinate her young girls with the mystique of the beauty of second-class citizenship knows she will have a misfit on her hands. And worse yet, she will have a daughter who never marries, thereby making the family a failure because they did not raise a successful daughter. Woman's success is always measured by the quality of the husband she marries. Mothers are often miserable that they have caused so much resentment on the part of their daughters. What they fail to realize is that they have been tragically and often unknowingly a part of the conspiracy to keep women in their place. Not only must the mother reinforce so-called feminine traits in her daughter, but often the only reinforcement given the child by the father is praise for being coy, cute, sexy, and flirty. In this way, the daughter is further driven to personally destructive behavior in order to win anyone's approval. In addition to being the foreman of the sex role system, the mother of the family has an additional problem which creates rage in herself. She doesn't have any money. There is an old cliche, he who pays the piper calls the tune. Women are encouraged from the day they were young girls being told not to prepare themselves for a career because they would someday get married, to the day they have a child and the whole world tells them to stay home and tend it, or risk being called a poor mother, not to earn money or even to be equipped to earn money. Shirley Chisholm said, women cannot, for the most part, operate independently of men because they often do not have sufficient economic freedom. What this means to our mothers is that, denied both the training and opportunity to develop their own talents and to make money, they are dependent for food for themselves and their children upon a man. Moreover, they are not in this position because of outside jailers alone. The slave in the South at least knew he was being held in bondage and didn't think he was on the plantation because he loved it. Our mothers place themselves in this position because of love. When one cannot express discontent over being totally economically dependent on another person who may or may not have your self-interest at heart, one feels rage. The average mother sees very little of the outside world, so her rage turns to her children, to her husband. Most of it stays in herself. The bitchy woman, the clutching mother, the nagging wife are such stereotypes in our literature and in the mass media that it is unnecessary to define them. Needless to say, I would not be naive enough to say that if women were liberated, there would be nothing but peace and harmony in the family situation. The closeness and lack of autonomy and privacy in family living will always cause problems. However, I would go so far as to say that if women were not consistently frustrated in achieving their own aims, they would not be so bitchy. If wives did not feel that their husbands were out in the world working with ideas and meeting interesting people while they were washing dishes and chauffeuring the kids, they would not nag. Women are jealous of men, wives of their husbands. This has nothing to do with penis envy. Your mother is jealous of your father because he is developing himself year after year as a person, and she is not. She is, in fact, gaining lesser status as the years go on. When a baby is small, it needs constant care and will die if left alone. Therefore, the mother who spends full time caring for it is an important person. As a child grows older, it needs less care. The role of the mother becomes extraneous. She is less important. Having been increasingly exposed to people more socially and intellectually developed than he, the husband becomes polished while the wife remains more or less the same. I think it is not unfair to say that in America one can tell how far a man has risen by meeting his wife, that is, his first wife. The wife's jealousy of her husband is not concealed. Ads for airplane companies and restaurants and credit cards say, "Don't leave her at home, take her along. Don't have all this fun while she stays at home with the children." The clear message is that women are left out of a lot of fun in the world and that they resent it. Since the average American woman has her youngest child in full-time school by the time she's 32 years old, we are in effect retiring women at age 32. The various anxieties that best men at age 65 when they retire from their work, and increasingly mandatory retirement is being re-examined because of the problems it causes for the individual, come to the woman at age 32. Since people of 32 are much more vigorous and healthy, it is obvious that being forcefully retired causes more anxiety in the woman. Evidence of this anxiety and depression is seen in the alcoholism rates for women, the greater number of women going to psychiatrists, and the huge number who have unnecessary surgery, all in the hope of alleviating their empty and sick feelings. When the man retires, if he had a position of importance, he is often encouraged to continue on as a consultant. Although his replacements may or may not welcome his suggestions, we can assume they file them in the wastebasket if the ideas are not functional. At the very least, we know that the authors of the country are not busy writing novels telling about how retired men are ruining American businesses and the professions. We know that comedians cannot get an instant laugh by telling an anecdote about a retired man trying to keep his hand in his old job. We know that all the problems which beset the employment situation after his retirement are not automatically blamed on him. Not so fortunate is the mother. She has been trained from early childhood to play with dolls, to aspire to motherhood as her most important, her only, significant goal. For a few years, during pregnancy, while the children are in preschool, she is adulated by the mass media, by the advertisers. People give her a seat on the bus and coo at the baby. In 6 years, she is finished. Not only is the majority of her work finished, the cooking and cleaning continues for life, the child raising is taken over for the most part by the school and the community, she is punished severely for trying to keep working. Every contemporary novel has a Sophie Portnoy for us to scorn. Men and children are busy telling mothers to keep her hands off the children. Everything bad that happens, the child shoots dope, the child flunks out of school, the child cracks up the car, is automatically the mother's fault. Typically, it is her fault because she didn't raise the child properly. Often it is her fault because she smothered him, her, with too much of that motherly over-solicitude. As long as motherhood is the occupation for women, mothers will continue venting their rage on their families. Mothers will continue prying into the lives of their husbands and children. They don't have their own lives. Many people, particularly young women, are acutely uncomfortable around their mothers. This is because daughters are consciously or unconsciously aware of the gross unfairness of the life situation of the mother. Young women, filled with the normal ego drives of any healthy person, can see that mother has been conditioned to live for others, and this makes the others feel uncomfortable. The guilt of children probably does not stem from wishing the death of the parents, as psychoanalysts tell us. The guilt, at least toward the mother, would naturally stem from watching another human being submerge all the pleasures and delights of self, of doing your own thing. When the mother develops into the bitch or the martyr, "I gave my life for you, and what do I get back?" The origin of the problem is the same. She has, in fact, given up her life and is fully entitled to be furious about it. In spring 1970, I spoke in Detroit, Michigan, and received the usual bunch of letters following a newspaper account of what I said. One letter illustrates perfectly the success of the brainwash women are submitted to. "I prepare meals and clean up afterward because I love the people for whom I cook and I like to see them well fed. I wash and iron articles of clothing and linens because I love the people who use them. I clean house because I like the house which is mine to clean, and I love the people who live here. I enjoy living in a clean home myself and like the people. I love to have a clean home in which to live. I accepted my husband's proposal of marriage because I love him. He did not force me to marry him. When I accepted his proposal, I knew what he expected of me. When a man loves and is loved, his job is to develop himself and go out into the city. When a child loves and is loved, his or her job is to develop and do well and achieve. When a woman, your mother, loves and is loved, her job is to iron the linens. We all scorn the woman who brags about her children. Showing off one's home with its expensive gadgets is in poor taste. Women are ridiculed for being clothes horses, for bragging about their great apple pie. This double whammy shows just how bad things are. Your mother is relegating to raising you, to cleaning the house. Women as a political class must be proud of the children and the house. That is their domain. If they show off anything else, a woman self-confidently talking at a party about her profession, the whole world mourns the neglected children and the dusty house. The final humiliation about women's work, church, children, and kitchen, is that women do not run these spheres in the world. The church is run exclusively by men, many denominations not even allowing women to be ordained or to lead prayers. The best cooks are men, everyone knows that. A woman speaking about sex differences told the audience that men, being more creative, are not cookbook cooks, but rather use their special imaginations to invent recipes. The heads of the interior decorating profession are men. Architects who design the houses in which we spend our lives are men. Women have practically an impossible time either getting into architecture school or in getting a decent job after they have graduated, should they be lucky enough to get into school. The giveaway about women's status is, however, men's relation to child raising. It may be said that cooking and cleaning are dull and unimportant, but it is agreed by all that the raising of children is a, perhaps the, prime function of this society. That's why men are the experts on child raising. The child psychology experts have been men, Dr. Gazelle, Angelo Patri, and finally Dr. Spock. It is a man like Dr. Spock, who lives a fulfilling professional and political life, who tells the women of America that their children will develop best if mama stays at home. It is Dr. Spock who tells the women of America that they shouldn't work unless absolutely necessary for the money. One of the firmest indications of the lack of self-love of women in this period is that we listen to these expert men who tell us how to run our lives. If there has been one domain which was the woman's, it has been bringing up children. No one could claim being in the house all day is a very effective way to live, but at least it was one's domain. The myth that men do everything better has now seeped down to raising the baby. The first director of the newly formed Office of Child Development, an agency in the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare, was a man, Dr. Edward Frank Ziegler. "My politics are children," he says. Although women have not made any headway in getting into men's fields, men have done very well in women's fields. Library science, education, and social work, formerly the domain of women, have now attracted men to their training programs. As a result, the men hold the administrative positions both in the institutions of higher learning and in the field. Also, these professions now have higher status and higher pay. The field of child development is also attracting men. Many self-hating female educators welcome this with incredible remarks about how children need the good influence of men. A recent article described an experimental nursery school in New York, which uses the latest methods for the cognitive and affective development of children, had a series of pictures in a weekly magazine. The photos showed young men only playing with the children. The caption gave the explanation. The reasons were, men playing with the children is that this is a special nursery school and uses very intellectual and sophisticated methods. We are to assume that if it were an ordinary crackers and milk nursery school, it would be staffed by women. Your mother must, as an agent of the society, help you as a young girl with two principal problems from which the male is largely exempt. One is that of renunciation. The young girl must understand, accept, acquiesce to, or rebel against the dictates of society, which relegate her to second-class status. She must deal with the reality which tells her that anatomy is destiny, that she must indeed do the dishes and become the mistress of the menial only because she has a uterus. Excluded from the definitive and consequential affairs in the community in which she must live, she must come to accept that her role is to be one of passivity and submission. Secondly, it is the problem of sexual infidelity on the part of the parents. Not errant sexual behavior of the parents, but of the turning away from the daughter to the male, son, as the natural heir and hope for familial immortality. It is during adolescence that the parents make it clear that intelligence and other talents of the daughter are now held by them as more quixotic than important. The mother then becomes the chief hatchet woman in this endeavor. She must, because she knows the secrets and tricks of beauty, teach them to her daughter so that a husband may be won. Often she must teach the daughter the work of the trade, how to cook, wash clothes, shop in the grocery store. There is no counterpart in the life of a boy. The mother or the father has no feeling that he must be made attractive physically in order to attract a wife. The boy's job is to do well in the world, and family resources are organized around helping him. The most important job which the mother has is subtle. She must, by her own behavior and attitudes, Dr. Spock says it is crucial that children learn sex roles from their parents at an early age, teach the girl her place, their place. No word need be spoken on this subject. If the mother waits on the family, has no career of her own, lives through her husband and children, and appears to derive her identity and pleasures in life via other people, the message is carefully taught and thoroughly learned. The daughter sees what she will be when she grows up, no matter how bright, artistic, scholarly, or beautiful she is. She will be a mother, and she will live to serve. Dr. Bruno Bettelheim stated clearly that a woman is judged as a failure if she does not marry fairly soon in life, no matter how successful or gifted she is in her own work. Motherhood was depicted to her as another tremendously enlarging experience, while in reality it forces her to give up most of her old interests. Dr. Bettelheim suggested as one solution to freeing women, creating something akin to the extended family by entrusting part of infant care to older children or sharing it with relatives. In relations with your mother, it is essential for every girl to realize the trap that she is in. If it is at all possible, the female children of the family should take it as their special responsibility to help the mother break out of her cage. Encourage her to go back to work, to go back to school, and try to get the household tasks shared by all members of the family, male and female. However, this is an ideal and will rarely be realized. In addition, it's not the duty of children to tell their parents what to do. It is, however, the duty of every female to help every other female. So if a mother shows signs of wanting to assert herself, she needs all the help she can get. She will, in all probability, not be getting help from your father. So resist the standard father-daughter alliance and do not side against your mother. I've heard very bright and basically kind men say to working wives that they didn't mind if she cooked their dinner late. They would understand. The work that the housewife does not only looks dull, it is dull. When someone does dull work out of the mainstream of the world for years and years, she becomes dull. This is why fathers often are more interesting to their daughters than our mothers. However, no daughter should be misled into thinking that men are better and more interesting. Women, your mother is a product of political oppression and should be understood as such. Many of us will have mothers who do not want to break out of the cage. My suggestion is to leave them alone. What they need is the love and understanding and compassion of other women, especially their own daughters. Moses stayed in the desert for 40 years, although the walk from Egypt to Jerusalem did not take that long. He stayed in the desert because he didn't want his new nation to be formed by people who had lived as slaves. And so he walked around until all those who had been born in slavery had died of old age. Self-determination and decision-making cannot easily become the lifestyle of a slave people. In the final analysis, the best thing we can do for our mothers is not to try to change them, but to liberate ourselves. If we are uneasy around our own mothers, it is because they are the closest living example of what the world does to women. And this makes us, if we are at all sensitive, very uptight. No blow is greater to a young woman who tells her mother of some accomplishment than to be asked in return, "Who made dinner for your husband?" If you have enough self-love, even that question will not destroy you. For there, but for the grace of Betty Friedan, go you. And that was the chapter called Mother, from The Young Woman's Guide to Liberation by Karen DeCrew, from 1970. It's 6:57 and a half or so, on a Sunday morning, Mothering Sunday. In the UK only. I hope I'm on the air Mother's Day. It'll be another show very similar to this. My name is Sharon Griffiths. The name of the show is Heresy, where radio speaks with a woman's voice. And I will be back on March 24th in 2 weeks. Same time, same station. Meanwhile, I go out with Alice Coltrane, called Isis and Osiris. See you in 2 weeks. Through the Opera Glass is coming up next.